I have no topics to talk on, so we just go on from there. This is Dr. Herbert O'Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today. I have no topics to talk about, so we just go on from there. Now, last night I gave Christine a set of four topics. Then I asked her to type it up and bring it back to the table so that I'd be sure to have it and not forget it. Now, she promptly put it away somewhere where she forgot where she put it. Where is it?
I couldn't type it out.
Why isn't it here?
No, I've typed it.
Why isn't it here?
I was able to print it out.
Why isn't it here? Why isn't it here?
I was unable to print it out because of the...
Why isn't it here? Now, that you didn't print it, I wrote it. My copy is there, isn't it? And I can always talk from my copy, can't I? You see, this is the thing that we have to learn to do. I said, Christy, of all the people sitting around this table, of all the monks that are here, and you are a monk, you are the most dependable monk. If I give you a task, I can be sure it's going to be done. So I'm going to give you this list of four items that we're going to talk about values, and you bring it to the table tomorrow so that I'll be sure to have it. And also, if you have a chance, type it up so that it'll be easy to read. And so Chrissy typed it up, put it on her computer, and she doesn't have a printer attached to her computer, so she didn't bring it here. Now, she didn't have a chip for her computer to take it to somewhere else. So instead of doing that, there are four lines of type. Four lines of type. She could have gone on Sylvia's computer, Seville's computer, and typed it up and ran it on her printer. Or, when all else fails, you can go to Ingeborg, because she has a nice computer too, and she has a printer attached to it, and it would print whatever you want printed. And you see, we never make excuses for not doing what we say we're going to do. If we don't do what we say we're going to do, then we die. You know. And then it's all over with. Then nobody can get after you because you're dead. You know, you're gone. Now, you say, well, Herb, that's kind of serious talk.
Yeah.
Yes, it is kind of serious talk. Now, how many men have inveigled women into having a relationship with them and said, I'm going to marry you? And then after the relationship, they didn't get married. Or how many women have inveigled men to have a relationship with them? And I figure it's mostly that way rather than the man.
Oh.
And then the woman decides, he's not so cool, I don't want to marry him, you know. And that's okay too, you know. But the thing is, we have that promise. Now, you have sex with me and we'll have that relationship, and then we'll get married. But that's terrible. That's terrible. If you're going to do something like that, don't make promises. Don't do anything. Maybe after you kiss the person, you don't want to do anything more. Maybe after you kiss the person, you never want to see him again. They just don't turn you on. Now, on Hogan's Heroes, this is that video, and oftentimes the girls kiss the guys, you know, these girls who are the underground and stuff like that. And they kiss some of the guys, and it's like, you know, kissing a sheet of paper. And then they kiss other guys, and they go, you kiss beautiful. And then they kiss other guys, wow, fireworks and crackers and stuff like that, you know. And what is that all about? What is that all about? How do you know when you're going to have firecrackers? How do you know when you're going to have sirens and bells going off? And people say they have sirens and bells going off, and they do. When people have a tremendously strong emotional attachment to one another, they have sirens and bells going off. And, hey, that's great. That's great. But now, is that so important? Is that so important? What do you want to do if you are going to have a relationship? is to find out where the switch is for those sirens and bells, so that every time you have a kiss of relationship or whatever, you can turn the switch on and you can have the sirens and bells, which of itself would be boring after a while. Now, what do you really want to do? You want to learn to speak from your heart. You want to learn to feel from your heart. You want to learn, and now I will describe heart in a minute, but you want to learn to do everything from the heart of you, the soul of you, from the essence of you. You want everything to come from that inner dwelling within you. Instead of so many divorces whenever there are marriages, if people dwelt from their heart, they would not have that condition. Now, what is the heart? Well, the heart, in truth, is what you have learned all of your life, to whatever time you're at right now, to make the values that you have your life. Now, is sex all that there is in life? No, hardly. Is sex important to life? Hardly. Is sex the ultimate of a relationship? Is it what causes a man and woman to want to get married? If it is, it's the wrong thing. Now, why is it the wrong thing? It's the wrong thing because they're not based on values. Now, does that man, that woman, does that relationship have the same values that you do? What are your values? What are your values that are making life worthwhile and important to you? What sort of things do you do? Now, what is your value? My mother always said, you know, you can fall in love with a rich girl or a poor girl. You know? And she merely was saying that, you know, just don't go jumping off the end of the bridge just because you find someone that makes firecrackers go off. And you can fall in love with a rich girl or a poor girl. You can fall in love with a fat girl and a thin girl. You can fall in love with a girl who's got pimples all over her face and not. But you see, what is it that you really fall in love with? What is it that really makes for a relationship, whether it's about between men and men and women and women or men and women, and I don't just mean marriage or sex, I just mean the relationship where you feel good with each other. What is it?
The values of another person.
And how are they expressed?
They're expressed through their charisma, through their vibration.
They're expressed through your charisma. What is your charisma? What is the vibrations that you give out? What are the feelings that you emulate as you are talking to another person? Do you sparkle when you talk to another person? Do you sparkle when you talk to yourself? Do you delight in your own presence? Do you delight in the presence of everyone around you? In the movie the other night, the young man reached down and petted the dog and just loved the dog, Golden Retriever, of course. Mm-hmm. And the woman who was standing next to him said, if you showed that much love to a woman, man, you know, they would love you very much. But now, what did he show to that dog?
He showed his real self.
I'm sorry?
He showed his real self.
An indescribable phrase. What he showed was unconditional love. Now, his real self is kind of hard to define, you know, but unconditional love, it was love without condition. He didn't want anything from that dog. He didn't want to give anything to that dog. He just felt, wow, I feel real smooth in your presence. You know, I feel real smooth in your presence. Now, why did he feel smooth in the dog's presence? Because that was his nature. His nature was to be unconditionally loving. His nature was to be a beautiful, wonderful person, not the snippy person that he appeared to be when he's around the women. Now, why was he a snippy person around the women? Because they expected him to be that way. They expected him to be that way, just sort of, I don't even know a term for it, but they expected him to be that sort of a devil-may-care, flippant type person. Well now, whether anyone expects you to be a way or not, who are you? What is your charisma? Does your charisma shine out so beautiful that wherever you go, people see your charisma and they have no idea what clothing you're wearing, no idea what your hairdo is, no idea the color of your eyes, no idea how tall or short you are, no idea how rich or poor you are. You just came in there like a ball of charisma, of beauty, charm, and love, and wonder, and magic. And they say, woo-hoo, wow. You can't even whistle at a person like that because a whistle is inadequate, you know. Beautiful. Now, this demonstrates our values to the highest and the greatest and the most wonderful extent. And any time anyone wants to get angry at another person, they bring up sex. Anytime anyone wants to destroy a discussion, they bring up sex. Anytime a person wants to put anything on an imbalanced situation, they bring up sex. Why? Because sex is so totally irrational. Sex is totally irrational. It's just an emotional response to something, and it's something that happens inside of you. You, inside of yourself, get emotionally aroused or irresponsible, and then you move out from there. But if you move on your charisma, you are always in charge. You are always the master. You are always doing the right thing. You could not even conceive of doing something that wasn't the right thing because that's not part of your
nature.
Charisma. Nature, true. It's not part of your charisma. Your charisma and your nature are one, that's true, but it's not part of your charisma. People say, that's so unlike you. Well, it's not part of their charisma. Now, what is so unlike you that you said was so unlike you? You say, well, Herb, I didn't say about anything. You said it. You said I said something. I didn't even think this. Now, what are you talking about? Well, what I'm talking about is this. You say it's unlike your nature because you lost your balance for a second and you saw them unlike their nature. Now, if you always see your child, your husband, your wife, your friend, whomever, like their nature at all times, you will have the most beautiful relationship in the world. But if you ever allow yourself to see them doing something unlike their nature, unlike the values that they live their life by, just for a moment, your relationship is kaput. It's dead. There's nothing left of it. You are in charge. It's not the other person. The other person cannot do anything right or wrong unless you observe it so. Because you can look at the most right thing in the world. You can look at a father. You like this one too. You look at this father. Don't you wish you were his child? You look at this father and he says, son, I think it's about time you learned how to handle money. Here's $1 billion. Go out and spend it and make it grow and do things, whatever you want with it. Just take whatever I've taught you up to now and go and have fun. $1 billion. Wouldn't you like a dad like that? You know? And so now you look at that father and say, oh, that's terrible. He's putting a burden on that child of trying to be honest and good with $1 billion. My God, that kid's going to go out and run crazy. He's going to do all these things. And then you look at the child and you say, my gosh, that poor kid, you know, somebody's got to help him. I'll go help him. No, somebody's got to help him so that he doesn't have trouble with that and that everybody doesn't come rob him and take from him, you know. And isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting?
Hmm.
Now, these are values that we have gained over the years. Now, what if you were to give your child, you would have to be a billionaire yourself to give your child $1 billion, you know. So what if you gave your child $1 billion? No, you got three kids. What if you gave each kid $1 billion and said, you're home free. There's no debt, there's no taxes, there's nothing. It's $1 billion solid gold bars. You go out and do whatever you wish with it. Now, would you in your heart for even a half a second think, oh, I hope they spend it wisely? Would you in your heart think, I hope they don't use it unwisely? Would you in your heart think, I hope they buy something valuable and that they don't spend it all and then they have nothing again, you know? Could you in your heart think that if you did, you couldn't give it? always we give unconditionally without strings. And when we give that way, then beautiful things happen. Now, what would happen to those kids? One kid was an artist. He'd immediately go out and buy art supplies. He'd immediately go out and take courses in art and maybe travel to Paris or Rome or wherever the art is that appeals to him, you know. Or maybe he's studying European or Asian art, you know, or even art up in Russia. So who knows? And he'd go and study there. No. Would he be ostentatious? Would he put on a big show wearing fine clothes and fine this and that? No. He'd be just normal. He was there for the art. He was there to learn and to experience it. And you can buy it. With $1 billion, you can buy a heck of a lot of art. Some good stuff, too. But he wants to develop his own creativity. Now, would you say he was investing in himself? Very much so. His trip there to learn art is investing in himself. Who is he? He's an artist. He's going toward his field. And so then we could have all sorts of other illustrations. But the point is, what is the charisma of that person? The charisma of that person is who he is. Now, what does a true artist do? A true artist looks at all the art in the world and looks at it from the point of view of saying, that's a nice way of doing it. Or, those are strokes I've never tried. Or, that's a way of doing it that I don't think I'm ready for yet. I'm not ready for it. Not that it's good or bad, but I'm just not ready for it. It takes a lot more flamboyance than I have. And so, the person is doing these things. And the person is being himself. And that's pretty nice. So, she gives $1 billion to Chioma. Chioma, that big flake, you know. All she does is go around looking beautiful, you know. All she does is go around being intelligent. All she does is go around and making her friends feel that life is the most wonderful thing on earth. You know, that's all she does, right? Yes. And more. And so, she's going to spend her $1 billion making everybody in her world, not making everybody, but providing the opportunity for people to have fun with her, you know, and to love her. Now, if she had $1 billion, do you think she'd go on pursuing her career in mathematics? No. She would go and establish a university, or she'd establish an organization, probably a university, which would be called the University of the Ultimate in Mathematics. And in that university, in the Ultimate of Mathematics, she'd hire the finest professors. She can afford it, you know. And hiring the finest professors, then she learns too. But she's more interested in math as a game than as anything else. And so she's playing this game. And she's having fun. And she has made herself give a contribution to the world of a new look at mathematics with the money that other people would have gone and bought beautiful houses and yachts and stuff like that. Those things don't appeal to her. She might do it, but she'd rent it rather than owning it because she doesn't want to use it every day. And when she wants it, she wants to have it all fresh and clean and tidy, and she wants the latest. She doesn't want yesterday's yacht to go out on. She wants today's yacht to go out on. And so she just rents them when she wants them. And when she wants a castle, she says, I think I'd like that castle in downtown Madrid, and I'd like to have it for 3 weeks. And it belongs to Mr. Big and Mr. Wonderful and Mr. Fantastic. But Mr. Big and Mr. Wonderful and Mr. Fantastic, they are more interested in money than they are in anything else. And they say, well, of course, this very wealthy guy who owns an island out in the Caribbean or someplace, a beautiful island in the Bahamas, I think it is, beautiful island, and it's just fabulous. And he has that island for himself. It's his personal island with his house on, and it's a little hotel on it for his friends. And so he rents it out when he's not using it. He rents it out for a couple of $1 million a day. He rents it out, and people rent it. Now, if you owned it, you would have to maintain it and keep it up and so on. Well, now, he has the opportunity of saying, that's my island. But he also has the opportunity of saying, my island's making money for me faster than anything in the world, you know? Who owns an island that makes millions of dollars a day for them? Ha ha! And has people waiting in line 365 days. And the days that I want it, I say, that's the day I'm there. Clean it up. I don't want to ever see any evidence anybody else was there. And then it's mine, you know? And that's what he does.
David Copperfield.
No. This is a rich guy, a billionaire of something or other. He owns a couple of airlines and other things, and very, very wealthy guy. And Vargas or
Virgin Islands?
The Bahamas. He does exist. I was reading about him in Business Week magazine, Fortune magazine, all the big magazines that talk about dollars. And he's fantastic. Now, does he have values? Sure. How could he be so rich and have values? Well, that's why he's so rich. But he, nobody picks on him. Nobody tries to make fun of him. Nobody tells him that he's doing bad things. Nobody tells him that his values are not good. Nobody. Not because he's so rich, but because his values are good. His values are noble. His values are fine. You see? And so, really, when you live your values, when you live by the things that you think and know are right and good, then everything functions in a perfect divine order. Now, are you ready for living in that way? Are you ready to take your values and put them to the test? Are you ready to take $1 billion and give it to each one of your kids? You know, and you see, you wouldn't say like that because to you it'd be natural. To you it'd be natural. You go out and you flick $1 billion this way and flick $1 billion that way. That's what Bill Gates does. That's what Warren Buffett does. That's what all these wealthy people do. You know, and teach frugality, that's all stupidity. Teach proper development of how to build money and make it grow, that's stupidity. What is the only good thing to do with money? To use it in harmony with your values. If you use your wealth in harmony with your values, then you will feel good however you use it. You will feel good however you use it. And remember the prodigal son? Did his daddy say to him, you stupid jerk, you stupid, stupid kid, you spent everything, you wasted it away, and now you're eating in the pigsty, you're stupid, stupid. He didn't say that. What did he say? That's his son. What did he say to his son?
Quick.
Welcome.
With open arms, and the fatted calf, and the brother who stayed at home, he says, you didn't do that for me. He says, well, you didn't go away. Well, Dad, should I go away and spend my inheritance? That's up to you, son. Wherever your values are. And his values were the workaday values of staying on the farm and helping his dad and working, you know, with his inheritance and so on. The other boy's value were to go off and wine women and song. And he did it very well. So completely, he had nothing left. But he had the ability to come home and say, Dad, I goofed. And to know that his father would respect that. But his father not only respected that, his father saw him coming from afar before he even had a chance to say, I goofed. And the father says, you are my son, you are my value. You are my beautiful being. Come. This is your home. Whether you have taken your value from, not value, but whether you've taken your benefit or whatever you say from it, you know, your inheritance, whether you've taken your inheritance and used it or not, this is still always your home. As long as I'm living, this is your home. And when I'm not living, I have bequeathed it to whomever, and that will stand. But as long as I'm living, this is my home and this is your home. Now, what kind of son do you think that was? We never heard too much about him, did we? Never heard too much about his values. But all of it was shown by his ability to, after he goofed, to forgive himself, to come home willingly and belittle himself to his father if necessary, to humble himself to his father, which he didn't have to do, and let his father say, "This is my beloved son." Somebody else said that too, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, now, can you say that to yourself when you make a mistake or when you do something that you're not proud of? And can you turn the tide and come around and be living by your values when for a moment you forgot? Yes, you can. People do forget their values, but that doesn't mean the values have forgotten them. So for this moment and for this day and for these 26 minutes, we have shared the idea of these values. Now, are you ready to live by the charisma that you shine forth? Or are you going to polish up that charisma a little bit and make it look like the beautiful being that you are?
Mm-hmm.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Have a lovely morning, and know that I love you, I love you, I love you, and I will meet you at my hermitage at 10, or you?
10.
Which
10
one?
10 to 10.
Okay, you.
10.
You at
10. 10 to 10.
10 to 10. Well, I better run then, because I'm going to get another path in. So, I will see you when I get there. Okay?
Thank you.
And when I go in, you just go right on in, sit down, and if I'm not there, but I should be. I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.